This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The World Bank says more than half of Gaza's population is on the brink of famine as Israel's genocidal war enters its 167th day. The World Health Organization says Israel has carried out over 400 attacks on Gaza's healthcare sector during its genocidal war, killing nearly 700 people. And the Palestine Football Association has called on FIFA to impose sanctions against Israeli teams over the regime's campaign of genocide in Gaza. Now, more than 5 months in Israel's genocidal onslaught on Gaza, the regime strikes keep claiming more civilian lives across the territory. Latest Israeli airstrikes killed a dozen civilians, including at least two children in northern and southern Gaza. Palestinian sources said another air raid on a home east of Rafah city killed at least six civilians, and an Israeli strike targeted a home west of Gaza city, killing a mother and child. Israeli military drones also targeted a group of civilians east of Jabalia in northern Gaza, killing three civilians and wounding 10 others. The Israeli genocide has so far killed nearly 32,000 civilians and left over 74,000 injured, and 7,000 are unaccounted for and presumed dead under rubble. The World Bank says more than half of Gaza's population, including children and the elderly, are on the brink of famine, calling for urgent action to save lives. An international rights organization has called for urgent global measures to stop ongoing Israeli massacre of Palestinians at Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital. The Euromed Human Rights Monitor says regime forces have killed at least 100 Palestinians at hospital surroundings. It added, survivors' accounts show many of those killed were victims of extrajudicial executions after their arrest. It said regime is still arbitrarily detaining hundreds of civilians for three straight days now, including medical staff and immobile patients. The Euromed said the international community has to intervene immediately to put an end to Israel's atrocities that have been ongoing for 3 days. It's also called for an international committee to be set up and probe Israel's war crimes and crimes against humanity in Gaza. The World Health Organization says it's documented 410 Israeli attacks on Gaza's healthcare sector since the regime's genocidal war started back in early October. According to the World Body's latest figures, regime's attacks on the sector have left 685 people dead and 902 injured. Israel's strikes have also damaged 99 healthcare facilities and over 104 ambulances in Gaza. It added two-fifths of Israeli attacks have taken place in Gaza City, a quarter in northern Gaza, and another quarter in the southern city of Khan Yunis, emphasizing healthcare sector should not be a target in armed conflicts. The World Health Organization urged the Israeli regime to respect international law, which calls for active protection of civilians and healthcare facilities. Volunteer medics have been working hard to provide aid to Palestinians since the beginning of Israel's onslaught. They often describe the situation and the besieged territory as horrific, genocidal, and inhumane. And recently, a British surgeon who spent some time in Gaza shared his distressing observations in an interview with reporters.
And I spent 2 weeks at Al-Aqsa Hospital, and I think it's fair to say I wasn't remotely prepared for what I was what I saw. I saw the most appalling atrocities, and I saw things that I never would have expected to have seen in any healthcare setting. Some days we didn't have any surgical gloves, so we had to wash previous ones. Sometimes we had no surgical drapes. Many days we had no morphine. On many occasions, no antibiotics. So really limited resources, knowing that actually a lot of that, those resources were probably in depots somewhere or maybe in lorries queuing up outside at Rafa, but could not be distributed. And this is what is so urgent about the need for a ceasefire, is that the only way that aid that's being delivered to Gaza, and we welcome every bit of aid, the only way that aid is going to get to where it's needed is if there is a ceasefire. Spent some time a while ago looking up the definition of genocide in a variety of dictionaries, and what is going on in Gaza fulfills every single definition of genocide that I have read.
Meanwhile, Israel continues dropping bombs and firing artillery at Gaza, further indicating regime-specific goal to commit genocide in the besieged territory. Now, there were new airstrikes on the Baraj refugee camp, also in central Gaza. Over 36 Palestinians lost their lives in the latest Israeli bombardment of the two camps. Israeli military also once again opened fire at Gazan aid seekers, killing at least 30. It took place when regime forces targeted a gathering of popular committees formed to secure the transfer of aid from the Kuwait roundabout to Gaza City. Death toll from U.S.-Israeli campaign of genocide since October the 7th has now topped 31,900, and over 74,000 have been wounded. A senior Hamas leader has slammed the Israeli regime for deliberately trying to derail ceasefire talks. Osama Hamdan says Israel will not achieve in negotiations what it's failed to accomplish on the battlefield in Gaza.
In every round of negotiations, they escalate their crimes against our people, believing that by committing such crimes, they might achieve, make some achievements on the negotiating table. And here we underscore once again that what the occupation did not succeed in getting via the military confrontations, and in light of the genocidal crimes, they will not take this by negotiations. The movement is striving with all efforts in order to end this war of aggression against our people and is intensifying its effort. The movement is therefore following the negotiation track via the brothers in Egypt and Qatar, and the movement submitted a complete vision according to the principles which we consider to be necessary for an agreement, which fulfill, or these visions fulfill, the priorities of our people and resistance in ending the aggression and the return of the displaced to the places where they had shelter, and the withdrawal of the occupation forces completely from the Gaza Strip, and also allowing for more aid and assistance to come in and to launch the reconstruction process. The movement also
Hamdan was addressing a presser in Lebanon. He said Hamas is doing everything possible to reach an agreement that will be favorable to all Palestinians. He, however, said the Israeli regime is buying time to continue with its genocidal campaign in Gaza. He underlined Hamas has shown greater flexibility against the stubbornness of the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Elsewhere in his speech, Hamdan said the regime's trying to make Gaza unlivable by destroying civilian infrastructure. He also condemned Israeli assassination of a Hamas official charged with the security of Gaza. He was pointing to the killing of Fayyuq al-Mabou, head of police and aid coordinator, during the regime's raid on Al-Shifa Hospital on Sunday. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the enemies have long attempted to bring the country's economy to collapse, but to no avail. Ayatollah Khamenei added that Iran has witnessed outstanding improvements in various domains over the past year, despite efforts by the enemies to instill hopelessness among people. He made the remarks on the occasion of the Persian New Year, where he elaborated on this year's slogan, "A surge in production through people's participation." He underlined, "Growth in production will only be possible with everyone's participation." Ayatollah Khamenei further highlighted the great capacities that Iran enjoys, noting, "Such potential, if properly tapped into, will ensure further economic prosperity." Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader touched on Israel's genocidal war, calling it the most pressing issue before the world. Now, the leader added, "The bloodshed unfolding in Gaza exposes the true face of so-called advanced Western civilization." He said, "West has not only been standing idly by in face of the massacre of Palestinians, but it's also been complicit in supporting Israel both financially and militarily." Ayatollah Khamenei also praised the resistance front, saying, "Events happening in West Asia have revealed the capacity and power of resistance against Zionism." He added, "Regional resistance groups have thwarted the plots of the Israeli regime and its Western backers, particularly the United States." Palestinians in the occupied West Bank have held a funeral for three young men killed in an Israeli airstrike in the city of Jenin. Three Palestinians were killed after the Israelis struck their car. Israeli forces carried out incursions into the West Bank, and they've been doing so on an almost daily basis, but they've intensified violent attacks across occupied territory since October the 7th, when the regime launched its campaign of genocide on Gaza. According to Palestinian sources, nearly 450 people have been killed and thousands abducted during Israeli raids into occupied cities and towns ever since. The Palestine Football Association has called on the football's international governing body, FIFA, to impose sanctions against Israeli teams for the regime's genocide in Gaza. The Palestinian Association said six other member nations have endorsed this proposal, asking FIFA to put it on the agenda of the upcoming FIFA Congress in May. It had regime's onslaughts killed nearly 100 footballers and destroyed or seriously damaged the entire football infrastructure of Gaza in clear violation of international law. Palestinian officials said at least five football clubs based in Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank are members of the regime's football association. They said such inclusion implicitly recognizes Israeli sovereignty over the settlements, which goes against international law and FIFA's obligations. The Israeli military has admitted that a missile fire from Yemen hit the vicinity of Eilat port in occupied territories, and it came after the Yemeni army spokesman announced the operation against the port.
The missile forces also launched a number of winged missiles at Israeli targets in the Omar Rashash area in southern occupied Palestine.
Yahya Sadi said that a cruise missile was launched from Yemen's territorial waters in the Red Sea toward occupied territories, and that the regime's Iron Dome and Arrow missile defense systems failed to intercept it. There's still no report of casualties or damage, as the Israelis claim missile fell in an unpopulated area. Now, head of the Eilat port told media, "Ship traffic at the port has been paralyzed since Yemen's anti-Israel operations in the Red Sea started back in mid-November. He said every month between 12 and 13 ships entered and departed this port, but now that number is down to zero. Yemen's foreign ministry has censured the UN Security Council for issuing a statement against the country's naval operations in the Red Sea. The 15-member body discussed the Red Sea this week, despite repeated declarations by the Yemenis that the operations are mainly targeting Israeli or Israeli-linked ships in a show of solidarity with Palestinians and against the regime's campaign of genocide in Gaza. Abdul Latif Al-Washali has your details out of Sana'a.
Yemen's foreign ministry has reacted strongly to a statement recently issued by the UN Security Council deploring attacks on vessels linked to Israel, as well as American and British assets in the Red Sea, and demanded the authorities in Sana'a to immediately halt such assaults. The ministry lambasted the 15-member council, saying Yemen's naval actions are only aimed at supporting Palestinians. It said the UNSC move reflects the body's submission to America's interests and its support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza.
The Security Council usually stands by American, British, and Zionist policies and implements their agenda, but at the same time fails to stop the Israeli massacres of the people of Palestine. Therefore, the Republic of Yemen considers any statements from the Security Council non-existent. Sana'a continues its efforts to support Palestinians in accordance with the will of the people in Yemen. The armed forces are also targeting American, British, and Israeli ships as Yemen stands alongside the axis of resistance in the fight against the axis of evil, and we will prevail, God willing.
Officials highlighted that Yemen's operations in the Red and Arabian Seas are motivated by the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza and enjoy support not only from Yemenis but also from the freedom-seeking people worldwide.
The Security Council's statement is futile and is part of American policy, meaning that a council tries to appease the United States and Britain at the expense of the blood of innocent Palestinians. We support Palestinians not only from the humanitarian angle, but there is a brotherly bond between Yemenis and the people of Palestine. Our actions are in retaliation for the ongoing Israeli genocide.
Meanwhile, the army spokesperson announced an assault on yet another American vessel, Mado, in the Red Sea, using multiple missiles. It also reported attacks on Israeli targets in the occupied territories, including the one near Eilat port that has also been confirmed by the Israeli military. The Yemeni army launched its anti-Israel operations in mid-November. It has, though, repeatedly announced that all other ships are free and safe to sail through the strategic waterway. However, recently they have also targeted American and British ships and retaliation for the two countries' aggression against Yemen.
People here say that during U.S.-backed years-long war on Yemen, the U.N. Security Council turned a blind eye to the war crimes committed against Yemenis. Therefore, they argue that the military action is the only way to deter the aggressors, as Western hegemonic countries only understand the language of force, not dialogue. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Alongside Iranians in Nowruz. In the name of God, Salam everybody, welcome to the program. Today is the first day of Nowruz holidays. Congratulations on this ancient Iranian feast. Stay with us for a special series on this occasion. We are going to introduce some of the customs and traditions of Iranians in various regions of the country on the period of Nowruz. Today we will speak about the traditions that are common almost everywhere in Iran. Hope you'll enjoy it. Many customs and traditions of world people have their roots in the past, and some of them have grown alongside man and his thoughts. An ancient tradition in Iran, with a past record of over 2,500 years, is the National Nowruz Feast. This feast enters Iranian houses with happiness every year with the arrival of spring. Nowruz has remained the ups and downs of history and lives with Iranians from any ethnicity and language. Whatever the history of Nowruz is, today it is an important nationwide feast, which is celebrated not only in Iran, but also in several countries which used to be part of ancient Iran. Nowruz is accompanied with many customs, as one of which is haftsin. Haftsin is the tablecloth which is spread in every Iranian house, and seven items are put on it, beginning with letter sin, S, in Farsi. It is a beautiful tablecloth which includes various things, each of which is said to symbolize a specific concept. These items include sib, apple, symbolizing paradise, sir, garlic, symbolizing health, samanu, pudding made with fresh wheat sprouts, symbolizing fertility and power, senjed, oil tree fruit, symbolizing wisdom and calculated action. Serke, vinegar, symbolizing satisfaction. Somak, sumac, symbolizing patience, rebirth, and sunset. And sabze, fresh sprouts of wheat or other green sprouts, symbolizing life and hope. Some believe that the seventh S is seke, coin, symbolizing wealth. There are usually other items in haftsin tablecloth, which include a fish bowl with fish inside, a copy of the Noble Quran, and a few colorful eggs. Many Iranians usually start the year with recitation of the Noble Quran, believing that it will bless their life for the coming year. But non-Muslims put their holy book in the tablecloth as a symbol of blessing. Another custom among Iranians before the arrival of Nowruz is khune tekuni, which means house cleaning. A few weeks before Nowruz, Iranians start cleaning their houses. They have carpets and curtains washed and walls, windows and furniture cleaned. Moreover, several weeks before the new year, municipalities in every city and town clean streets and adorn them with beautiful items. Interestingly, there is a unit in Iran's cities called Beautification Organization. This organization is in charge of decoration of streets and public furniture in every city and the peak of its activities before Nowruz. Nowruz shopping is another custom among Iranians. Iranians, based on their financial ability, buy new clothes and replace their old clothes with new ones before Nowruz. It should be reminded that while cleaning their houses, some people replace their furniture and tapestries with new ones according to their budget. AD is another beautiful custom which makes family members, especially children, happy. AD is the money given by elders to youngers upon visiting them. It is also customary to give a gift to wives by husbands. Among some ethnicities, brothers also buy gifts for sisters. AD is so significant for young children that once they do not receive it, they would think that their parents or grandparents have forgotten them. Furthermore, some friends exchange presents as a sign of affection and remembrance. Some people also give money to those who render a service, like trash collectors, janitors, mailmen, and various servicemen. Nowruz holidays end on the 13th of Farvardin month, called Sizde Bedar, or the Day of Nature. On this day, Iranians leave homes for parks, gardens, plains, and mountains to spend their time in nature. The food on this day is usually prepared in two ways. People either prepare it before going outdoors or take every item needed for the food and make it in nature. Ashreshte, a special kind of broth, is a very popular food on Sizde Bedar. Ashreshte is made with vegetables and legumes. Iranians also add whey and fried mint and onion to the food when serving it. Other kinds of ash are also made in Iran, which may contain meat, barley, and other items. Lettuce and vinegar mixed with honey or sugar are also eaten on Sizde Bedar. Dear listeners, as of the next episode, we will introduce Nowruz customs among different ethnicities in Iran.
Iranian weapon. Part 2.
Iran's defense industry experts have a big concern. Are they able to quickly protect the country against such air raids? These systems and machines are all manufactured and produced either by the US or UK. The range of their missiles is very limited, and their radars are hard to repair. But for now, all of Iran's defense capacity is restricted to such facilities, and the country has to advance its scientific potentials as well. The Rapier and Hawk systems. Rapier is a British short-range surface-to-air missile launcher, and Hawk was an American medium-range surface-to-air missile system. Iran had purchased them before the revolution. The missiles barely reached the required range to hit Iraqi fighter jets during the war.
Fire.
Now, these are Iran's only tools to fend off a possible attack by countries like the U.S. Of course, Iran had also bought a type of air defense system from the country where this man's pictures were painted on its walls, from Libya. During a symbolic parade, the systems are loaded for delivery to Iran, but they were not made by Libya. The Soviets had built them and named them Sam 2 and sold them to Libya. However, after Sam 2 was imported to Iran, it immediately stopped working after Libya's support was terminated. Gaddafi had decided to join the club of Saddam's supporters. Now, Iran must have launched and repaired the systems by itself. Thus, Iran was coerced to reverse engineer foreign radars and build the first national radar at home. In 1983, the U.S. invaded Iraq, and Iran must quickly acquire the systems that will put the entire country under a dome of protective waves. Iran is going to buy the SAM-5 from Russia. Russia's S-200 or SAM-5 eventually joins the Iranian army. SAM-5 is also handed over to the defense industry for study. Research on the concept of radar had been started for a long time and continued. Men and women came to work on the plan from all universities in the country. For the first time in its history, Iran wants to completely entrust its military needs to young students. The Mehrsad air system is the result of the trust. Mehrsad means ambush. The Iranian ambush is an example of the reverse engineering of the American Hawk. The first step to conquer the sky step by step. This is 2010. The Mehrsads launched their missiles one after the other. The missiles are called Shaheen and are domestically produced by Iran. The missile control room is also domestically produced. This is an important secret. This room is the big secret of Iranians. Without having information about it, it's impossible for the enemy to easily disable it. In today's world, if the defense systems are not indigenous, the fate of Iraq will repeat itself, and Iran is aware of this very well. The Mehrsad missiles were quickly updated. Mehrsad 1, 2, and 3. The Mehrsad air defense system consisted of three main components: missile and launcher, detection radar, and engagement radar, all of which in the initial versions were reverse engineered from the American Hawk air defense system. This system is of medium range, and its operational range has been calculated to be up to 40 kilometers. But it's not meant to stop there. The Shaheen missile quickly turns into Shalamche with a speed of about 4 times the speed of sound. Shalamche can hit any target at an altitude of 18 kilometers. This means Iran is gradually approaching the highest altitudes. The firing of Shalamche from the Mehrsad systems leads the then defense minister to respond to the U.S. claims. They claim to have the ability to attack Iran. Iran has an important theory called the defense dome. However, the defense dome has many needs that cannot be met by the Shalamche system alone. It requires special radars that can withstand the electronic warfare of the major powers. Perhaps something on the level of American air defense systems. But this is a big claim. American fighter jets fly at high altitudes, and they cannot be detected with ordinary radars. Will Iran build its own defense dome? In the 2010s, the country enters a new era, in which the turmoil of sanctions will reach its peak, and it's the economic issues that will attract more attention than the military ones. In 2013, the United Nations Security Council imposed sanctions on Iran based on a proposal by the US and its Western allies. One of the branches of the embargo is the purchase of weapons. It means Iran will soon face an important challenge regarding one of its purchases, the S-300.
Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz. Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz. Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz. Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz. Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz. Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, being excited about the holy month of Ramadan. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, dear friends, we are in the holy month of Ramadan. What a beautiful month to be witnessing in our lives, and what a great blessing from the Almighty Allah that we have been given the opportunity to be able to witness a holy month of Ramadan, this most holiest of months, in which, of course, we know that its days are the best of days, and its nights are the best of nights, its hours the best of hours. A month which is so holy that even our sleeping is considered to be the worship of the Almighty Allah. What a beautiful month indeed. And so one of the things, though, that we have a tendency to, you know, not really feel is to feel happy and excited about the holy month of Ramadan. Now, for those of us who are older, you know, and we have witnessed a few holy months of Ramadan already, you know, we don't have that excitement that perhaps we used to have. Or perhaps, you know, God forbid, we never had an excitement towards the holy month of Ramadan. Now, the holy month of Ramadan and this fasting and this feast of Allah, this is something which, you know, on a yearly basis, it teaches us to connect back with our Islamic lifestyle. So throughout the year, for example, you know, we kind of stray away from that pure and blessed and that epitome of an Islamic lifestyle that we are trying to achieve, you know, we kind of stray from that peak that we are trying to reach. And so the holy month of Ramadan helps us to come back and connect with that beautiful Islamic lifestyle that we are trying to achieve. And perhaps this is, you know, one of the things that we don't understand and we don't realize and we don't comprehend. And because we don't comprehend it, then we aren't happy about the holy month of Ramadan.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back. This is A2Z on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about being happy and being excited about the holy month of Ramadan. You know, so we had said in the previous segment that sometimes people that are a little bit older and they have witnessed a few holy months of Ramadan, they don't have that same excitement or that same, I guess, you know, happiness and cheerfulness about the holy month of Ramadan. And we said how there's, unfortunately, some of us out there, you know, who have never felt any excitement for the holy month of Ramadan, whether we've seen many or a few. Now, something for parents out there, this is applicable. We need to try to find ways to make the holy month of Ramadan exciting for our children. So they should really be looking forward to the holy month of Ramadan, and they should, you know, really be excited about the holy month of Ramadan. And it's something that we'll talk about in another program, inshallah. So one of the reasons why we are not happy or not excited about the holy month of Ramadan, whether it is in the beginning, you know, or towards the middle, because sometimes in the beginning we're really excited and cheerful, but halfway through the holy month, we, you know, our energy level starts to go down and we're not happy about the holy month of Ramadan anymore, is because we don't understand the essence of the holy month of Ramadan. We don't understand what is going on in this holy month of Ramadan. We don't understand the true meaning of the holy month of Ramadan and all the different aspects of it that are to our benefit. And I mean, you're going to have to listen to some of our A to Z programs in order to realize the benefits of the holy month of Ramadan. But if we know the essence and we know what's going on and we understand the value and importance and the benefits of the holy month of Ramadan, then we're going to be extra excited and extra happy about this holy month. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A2Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
You lift me up high, you spread my wings and fly me to the sky. So alive, it's like my soul thrives in your light. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan, 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 ya Habib. Ramadan. ليتك دوما قريب.
En respuesta a...
In response to the countries and the nations who dare to take their destiny in their own hands, to self-government, to self-determination, to simply be independent,
a simplemente ser independientes,
the imperialist forces and the imperialist countries take different measures. One of the most perverse measures are the blockades and sanctions, particularly those exercised by the United States, also by Western Europe, and sometimes even by some international organizations, such as the United Nations. Beware. The main function of these blockades is to try to complicate the life to the inhabitants of the countries with whom they have contradictions and want them to change their way of thought, government, and administration. Because it seems that freedom, free trade, and self-determination does not exist for them. Of course, it doesn't exist. And they immediately take measures that in some cases have resulted in very serious issues in nutrition, medicine, and the most essential elements in some countries. That is to say, who is ultimately punished is the people who receive the sanctions.
Los gobiernos que han sido sancionados,
the governments that have been constantly sanctioned have become stronger in relation to their population.
Y han cambiado el modelo de desarrollo.
And have changed the development model in such a way that as the great Chinese leader and founder of the People's Republic of China, Mao Zedong, said, the reactionaries lift the rock in their hands to such an extent that when they hold it up, it falls off on their own feet, and the sanctions become something negative for those who have imposed them.
Y se convierten las sanciones en algo negativo para quienes la han llevado adelante. Así tenemos, por ejemplo, que...
Thus, for example, among 17 sanctioned countries with the highest number of sanctioned companies, individuals, and private entities,
particulares,
some have been strengthened to such a level, as is the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, which has had sanctions since 1950. The Republic of Cuba, which has had sanctions since 1960, and almost total since 1962, and the Islamic Republic of Iran since
1979.
Well, we also have Venezuela, where we have Venezuela today that is satisfying almost 90% of its food consumption through internal production, something that has never been in history.
Los países sancionados.
The sanctioned countries, Nicaragua and Russia, strengthen their internal construction, their internal market,
su mercado interno, su industria,
their internal industry, in such a way that they advance scientifically and militarily, deepening their independence and sovereignty, which has been a setback for imperialism. It is true that a cost that had to be paid.
Es verdad que se ha tenido que pagar un costo.
And that affects the people, all the inhabitants of the country that is sanctioned. It is the madness of imperialism, that fanatic thing of subduing others through hunger. This is what the gringos and North Americans do. This is what the Americans do. But it goes against them. Today, in the Gaza Strip, Gazans are the most sanctioned on the planet. There, not even medicines, water, or anything else is allowed to enter. Zionism and its godfather, North American imperialism, are the ones leading it. The people are wise. They persevere on the path of independence and sovereignty. The sanctions have proven to be a fiasco at the end of the day. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Soy Eduardo Artes. Hoy, para hablar desde sanciones y bloqueos,
Today, we have a guest from Italy to talk about sanctions and blockade by imperialist powers against nations, governments, and countries. Fabrizio Cassari, Italian journalist and international analyst, expert in analyzing economic sanctions and punitive measures applied by capitalist powers against nations. Fabrizio Cassari, welcome to Black and White.
Thank you for your invitation. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Fabrizio, ubiquémonos en nuestra época desde el punto de vista contemporáneo.
At the current historical stage, what are the goals, consequences, and manifestations of these policies and sanctions by the imperialist powers?
De sanciones y bloqueos por parte de las potencias imperialistas.
La política de bloqueo y de sanciones es parte de...
The policy of blockade and sanctions is called the fourth and fifth generation war, depending on who brings it up. The modern war, which the unipolar world starts, is to simply prevent the world from becoming multipolar. In order to prevent the loss of its hegemonic role as a group, the West is increasingly using all the tools of the fifth generation war, that is, diplomacy, politics, and above all, the media and sanctions, which are the tools of this war. Sanctions today affect 17 countries with specific and selective measures and 6 countries with general measures. We must note that the type of these actions can be general or targeted at individuals. Therefore, a total of 23 countries have been targeted by unilateral, illegitimate, and illegal sanctions. We are talking about 72% of the world's population and more than 30% of the entire world's GDP. I said this to understand the size and the scope of this action. Sanctions, on the other hand, result from a clear but unfair desire to win a competition, competing with products and markets. When you ban the export of a country's products and when you have the same product, you will be the only option for purchase. Furthermore, when you prevent a country from using the international transaction withdrawal system, things get more complicated. The effect of this action is not only on your target country, but also on all countries that want to do business with it. This gets even more complicated when you block a country from accessing SWIFT transactions and also block it from using the dollar currency. When a country is sanctioned, the only option left is to buy Western goods. With these conditions, the West keeps its economy in a state of addiction and says that it is the best and biggest economy. But no, the reason is sanctions. As I told you, sanctions are not a substitute for war. Many times you are told that sanctions are a substitute for war. This is a lie. Sanctions are the art of war. This should be clarified. And in the following, you will see their dire goals.
Entonces esto habría que quedarlo claro, claro. Y vamos a ver después cuáles son sus objetivos finales, ¿no?
Así es. Las sanciones son parte de la guerra. Ahora bien, ¿cómo los pueblos?
Yes, that's right. Sanctions are part of the war. Now, according to the current situation that we are witnessing, the situation has changed. As we know, we see American countries that have stood up for their rights, and how the Democratic People's Republic of Korea has strengthened in science and the military sector, etc. And Venezuela has made an incredible progress in food production. And Iran has solved a series of issues in the food security sector and has made progress in the scientific and military fields. And also in the case of Russia, it seems that the sanctions have had the opposite effect.
La propia Rusia, ¿no es cierto? Pareciera ser que el efecto fue al revés, ¿no? Es decir, hoy día...
Is there a case today that sanctions have been able to achieve the goal of overthrowing a government and changing the direction of a country?
A un gobierno a cambiar la orientación de ese estado?
Jamás, ni uno. Ni uno.
Never, not a single one. There is no country in the world that has been overthrown due to Western sanctions. When I say Western sanctions, it is actually an implicit meaning that means U.S. sanctions. And then the rest of the West also follows these sanctions, but they're not the ones who impose the sanctions. I mean specifically the European Union. EU sanctions are ridiculous. For example, it's funny when Latin American countries like Nicaragua is sanctioned because Europe's trade relations with Nicaragua are very small. What does Nicaragua lose when sanctioned? What we see is that the ultimate goal of sanctions is to topple governments. Who are these sanctions against? Against all governments that do not submit their political sovereignty, resources, and political identity to the West, or in fact, America. Countries that believe that they have the right to choose their own government, as well as the right to choose the government's program, goals, and international stance, are considered enemies. How do they become enemies? A campaign is started which almost always says that those countries are violating human rights.
Se comienza la campaña diciendo que esos países casi siempre, siempre violan los derechos humanos.
Ahí vamos a quedar.
We will take a break for a few moments and then continue the second part with Fabrizio Casari.
Volvemos, estamos acá con Fabrizio Casari.
Back here we are with Fabrizio Casari. The discussion is about embargo and blockade. You were giving reasons for your own explanations. Go ahead, Fabrizio, please.
Adelante, por favor, Fabrizio.
Y lo que decía es que no haya habido ni un gobierno en el mundo.
Yes, I was saying that there is not a single government in the world that has been overthrown due to the sanctions of the United States and the West. And there is no government that will fall because of this in the future. This is a zero-sum game, and when despite the efforts of America and the West, when the desired result is not achieved, it means America's defeat. Sanctions are illegitimate because they have not been declared by any international court or the United Nations, which are the only organizations that have the authority to impose sanctions. These sanctions are illegal because they're not announced by the courts. They are announced by the offices of a ministry, and they are part of the political actions. These sanctions are unfair because the people being sanctioned have nothing to do with the government that may or may not fall. But the reality is that they hit the governments that do not surrender their political sovereignty and resources to America. Governments that do not want to determine their own political line and place in international confrontations in exchange for not being sanctioned. These countries are immediately considered by the U.S. as enemy countries, and then the U.S. says that these countries violate human rights or claim that these countries are declared an extraordinary threat to the security of the U.S. Why do they say this, despite the fact that it is a country 30,000 kilometers away? They say this, and they make management statements about it so that they later commit the most theft of resources based on these words. They must have a political justification for their robberies and looting, otherwise the law of America itself will not allow them to do so. The point is that 72% of the world's population is sanctioned by the other 25%. Can a system like this continue to work? Obviously not. Can almost 30% of the GDP be sanctioned? Because the one who used to have 60% of the production and now this figure doesn't even reach 40% of the world's gross domestic product makes such a decision. These are questions that all lawyers and people with knowledge in the world have. But in addition to some of this conversation, there's also the boomerang effect of sanctions. What will happen? When some countries are sanctioned, the United States and Europe cannot officially sell those products, and this causes their products to be stockpiled. These products expire. For one, because I remind you again, we are talking about 72% of the world's population. So when you know that you can't do business with 72% of the world's population, you can't sell anything to them. You can't buy anything from them. Your production will only be for 28% of the world's population. This amount is very, very low. So your economy will have very, very little growth and possibly negative growth. So this is what is officially on paper, while the U.S. has historically shown that its sanctions with